Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Damn It. I'm Jennifer Weigel, and joining me in studio, Julie Murphy Casserly. She is a money expert, author of Emotions Behind Money and Awaken Your Wealth, and the founder of JMC Wealth Management. Julie, thanks for being in the studio.
Absolutely. You're very welcome.
So we met when I was a Tribune columnist, and a mutual friend said, you got to meet my friend Julie. She's not your typical money manager. And I'm like, okay, first of all, I don't know if I could even wrap my head around that sentence, not your typical money manager, because I have this, you know, belief system that people who manage money are, sorry, but like, you know, white guys over 50 that, you know, count your pennies and they're
average
really rich.
Age is 58 years old.
Okay, so there you go.
You're totally right.
They're rich and you're not, and you're like, what's going on? But how did you get into this world? Because you aren't your typical money manager. You believe in a lot of energy and spirituality that kind of comes into your work, but not in a woo-woo, I'm head in the clouds kind of way.
Right.
In a very practical kind of way. Yep. When did this become a passion for you?
Well, so I am one of 12 children. And so, and I'm at the top of the stack.
Okay.
And so when I went away to school, there was no way I was going to go into something like sales and not use my degree. And that's actually how I started in this industry, because I was like, oh my God, if I paid for myself to go through college, that I was going to apply my degree and, but also be the outgoing personality that I am.
Right.
And so when I started to realize I was not the blue suit. And my very first boss said to me, you know what? You have to stop hugging your clients when they walk in the door. And I looked at him like he had 10 heads because I'm like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
You're talking about the birth of their children, the death of their loved ones, and all the money and everything in between, and you can't hug them?
That's
like
not
I
right.
thought that,
yeah.
And that was that, you know, white male who's, you know, in his 50s, and at the time he was in his 40s. And,
right.
You know, and I started this 21 years ago and going into the business. And then when I decided to just let my freak flag fly and say, you know what, I'm just doing it differently. Then all of a sudden, you know, as life aligns, the gentleman who actually convinced me to go into this industry when I was down at the University of Illinois actually showed up one day as my boss, and that old management regime was replaced.
Wow.
And he goes, I know you. I'm like, yes, you do. And to this day, he is one of my mentors. And he just told us what to do because he thought the industry was actually going to get into some trouble,
right.
which we currently sit in,
right,
with
course.
Economic challenges.
Sure.
And he said, if I were to do it all over again and I didn't have a family and I didn't have kids at this point, I would start to really operate as a client advocate and hang your own shingle.
Right.
And so at 27 years old, I actually then incorporated and opened it up. And what I decided to do is that if I'm really trying to represent the clients, well, let the clients tell me what they want. And so I surveyed them and had them tell me that they really were searching for somebody to be their advocate.
Right.
But then they also didn't know how to navigate the financial product side, whether it be insurance or investments. And I was like, okay, which means that it needs to be twofold. It needs to be, okay, how do you help be somebody's advocate when the only way that you're compensated is actually by buying a product? And that's where I found the biggest disconnect. Because money is energy.
Yeah.
And we have to energize what we want people to be or what we want our financial intentions to be. So that's when we decided to actually charge a consulting fee to help people with their finances. And people were like, thank God. They were happy to write the check for that because then we were in energetic right alignment.
And you were giving them clarity.
Yeah. And then I didn't care whether or not, like, I did build a team to help them implement their plans in certain areas, but then I built strategic alliances to do it in other areas that we weren't expert in. And so that we could help them from a holistic standpoint to really help them to get them where they're at. And what's very interesting to me is that come April 1st, of 2017, we now have a Department of Labor regulation that is coming down like a bull in a china shop on this industry.
Right.
Where when they did it in Australia, 60% of advisors all left the industry. And in the UK, 55% of advisors left the industry.
What are they going to do in April of 2017?
Yeah.
How are they going to change
so
that?
So we're already seeing some of that trickle-down effect. So you've got State Farm, as an example, just said they will no longer let their agents service IRA retirement accounts. So you're going to have to call an 800 number if you're a customer of State Farms and you bought an IRA through them. You've got companies that are nationwide just bought a huge book of business from another insurance company because they don't have the kind of products that actually support a client advocacy relationship.
Okay.
So what it's doing is it's squeezing out That you can no longer operate and not be an advocate for your client. It's almost like counterintuitive to the average person going, what do you mean you weren't my advocate? I bought all those products through you. Mm-hmm. And the fact that now, legally, if you deal with anyone's retirement accounts, you are automatically a fiduciary, which means you could go to jail if you mislead somebody.
Ooh, that sounds good.
And the general public is like, finally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and my clients told me this when I was 27 years old. Now, right. 16 years later, the industry has finally put, or I should say the government has finally put regulation in place to force that upon people who didn't choose for that to be their primary objective.
Got it. Okay.
And so it's turning the entire industry on their head. So you're going to have different product lines. They're going to be paid differently. And I think the biggest reason why there will be turnover is that the average age of an advisor today is 58 years old.
Okay.
And you'll just have a bunch of people, as opposed to completely changing their business models, they're just going to choose to retire.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, if they can,
correct.
I mean, do they have the nest egg to do that?
Well, or they're going to have to roll up and fold into somewhere else that will then help to support them.
I see.
I have people calling me all the time now say, hey, can we look at us working together? I'm kind of going, no.
I'm fine without you.
Well,
thanks.
It's because of the fact that I don't want anyone who really chose that was their priority before.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you operate a certain way, energetically, it's not that you can't shift. It's just that I don't want to be a part of a person's learning curve in the industry from that. Because I've tried.
Right.
Went back in 2008 when my first book came out, The Emotion Behind Money.
Yeah.
I tried to stand in front of groups of financial planners, and I was laughed off the stage.
Oh, jeez.
I had people at the National Association of Financial Planners. Gentleman with, there was about 500 advisors in the room, and a gentleman raised his hand. He goes, I don't get what you do. And I go, this is the problem, because if I sit in front of 2,000 people in the general public, they completely understand what I do, but the advisors don't.
Right.
And I said, because we go to our left brain logical as an advisor, and we just try to be logical about it. And the challenge is that we've taken humanity out of finance.
Right.
And the process we work through is that we're blending that humanity back in, that we're embracing the fact that, yes, we are human beings and we have emotions with our money.
Right.
And how do you then position you to be lucky to create then the quality of life for your kids' college planning or, you know, purchasing homes or your own retirement? And for the most part, most people only have a handful of goals that they have in their lifetime.
Right.
And left brain logical is not necessarily always the right answer.
So when you came out with The Emotion Behind Money and you're talking to all these advisors that are looking at you with a head tilted sideways like a dog hearing a weird sound.
Sure.
What helped turn that tide? It's sort of like when, you know, more medical doctors are coming out and saying they believe in near-death experiences,
sure.
You know, because more MDs are dying and coming back and living to talk about it without oxygen for minutes at a time.
Totally.
So what is it going to take to get these managers, or what have you seen sort of help turn the tide with them to understand that there's emotion behind money?
Absolutely. And so at that time in 2009, it was that I actually actively chose to not spend any more time educating advisors. I just decided, you know what? They won't listen to me until I prove the numbers.
Okay.
That actually that mine is successful. And my business has grown 10 to 30% per year since then.
Nice.
And it's because when you do right by people and money is energy, more money comes.
Right.
I now have 7 other financial planners who work for me. And I was just asked at the end of last year to actually speak in front of some top advisors for Pacific Life Insurance Company. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, God, do I really want to do this again?
Oh, they sound like a barrel of
like,
laughs.
Oh, God, here we go. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. And so I decided to go ahead and do it. But I was like, I am going to be authentically me. And just, you know, like, for example, I said, okay, here's the typical financial firm and how they are set up. And I said, and my company is the antidote. And just saying that, and this is how we operate, and this is how where we have to go from where it is that we've been trained to be to where it is that humanity is at, and this is how we blend those two worlds. What was interesting to me at the end of last year, when I had a line of like 10 advisors who wanted to talk to me afterwards, so all of a sudden I didn't have the plague any longer.
Right, right.
And then that night when I went to dinner, there were 3 seats saved for me at different tables. Oh. So that tells me Mm-hmm. People are starting to wake up. Advisors are starting to wake up that there is a bigger picture.
Right.
And I think this new regulation coming April 1st next year mm-hmm. is just going to catapult that even more.
Right.
So people and companies are starting. They've been waking up, I would say, over the last 12 to 18 months.
Okay.
And so it's like
slow.
Turning the Titanic.
Yeah. It's not a sharp left turn. We got to go beep. Beep, beep,
right,
one inch at a time.
And so they started listening to me because my numbers started to prove it, and then they wanted to see, well, what is she doing while everyone else is struggling to grow?
Well, give me an example of what it is that you're doing that helps people better understand, oh, gosh, I am an emotional saver or spender.
Yeah, well, so it's about the fact. So as an example, if you go to your financial planner's office or even if you take the quiz for your 401k at work,
right.
They're going to say, oh, okay, you answered these questions this way, and this is the bucket that you belong into.
Mm-hmm.
And then so I would argue that, well, that's your left brain logical. There is a software that's out there now that's been developed that takes the human element into account. And so I have clients not only fill out the traditional financial risk questionnaire, which is their left brain.
Yeah.
This other one is their right brain.
Okay.
And so
give me an example of some of the questions on that.
So it just says, you know, if you were in this particular situation, how would you respond? Would you not respond at all? Would mm-hmm. you go after the person? Would you stay neutral? And mm-hmm. so it's a lot of those personality questions like Myers-Briggs.
Sure, sure.
But it does it from a financial perspective. And what I've learned is that 95% of the people that I have take both of these quizzes mm-hmm. actually answer them very differently.
Wow.
To where, oh, so your left brain's saying, okay, I'm educated enough to understand that I'm 30 years away from retirement, so I should be in this portfolio. But when the market crashes, I am scared to death and I move my money to cash.
Right.
And so the blend between these two risk questionnaires actually allows a person mm-hmm. to find that happy balance between their logical side and their emotional side. And that way it helps them to the path of financial success.
So if people are terrified, say, you know, of what's going on in our landscape with all the polarization that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
If a client comes to you and says, I want to invest everything in gold and I'm burying bottles of water in my basement.
Yep.
You know, has that happened? And if so, what do you counsel them?
Well, I just had a client who actually told me she divorced somebody who was saying that.
Okay.
Well, because there's a place like where, so it's really about what's the underlying fear.
Right.
Right. And
right.
so you
having
have to
nothing.
Start,
yeah.
Right, so you have to peel the onion. Mm-hmm. So the questioning really goes to, well, tell me what does that mean for you?
Mm-hmm.
Because what buying a bunch of gold and water to me might mean something totally different to somebody else.
Right.
And I say, well, what has led you to this? And so it's about first seek to understand
sure.
why they're making those comments and then just say, well, tell me about your investment history. Tell me about your history with working with somebody in the finance field.
Right.
Tell me what's been passed down from your parents. Tell me what
is that a lot of what's going on?
Oh, enormous.
Sure. People inherit.
Because it's generational
it.
Stuff. Uh-huh. And so you don't realize that, you know, it was interesting. I went to Deepak Chopra's symposium back in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And I love going there because there's a lot of bright PhDs from around the world that go there.
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman stood up there and he's a quantum physicist. And he said, we have now proven that there is a holographic layer in our universe that if you work with a practitioner that can tap into that layer, something that would have taken 10 years from a traditional psychotherapy perspective to get through can now take 30 seconds. And
it's a way to heal your issues in about a minute 30.
Right. And so I, not knowing this research, mm-hmm. I had actually met some of these practitioners back in 2005, 6, and 7
mm-hmm.
that when I couldn't get clients to shift, I was like, you know, this is going to sound a little esoteric.
Right.
But I really think you just do a session. They'll blow your mind.
Like an energy healer?
Yes.
Or, yes.
But people mm-hmm. that who can help cut the cords of mm-hmm. generational patterning
sure.
that happens that you're like, why do I keep hitting my head against the wall? And it's
right.
because you have these things energetically that are passed down from one generation to the next. And like a lot of my patterning comes from 8 generations ago. And it was when my ancestors came from Ireland to America.
Right.
And that's when all my patterning started. And it's all on my dad's side. Yeah, I inherited my dad's side. It's interesting. One of my siblings has all my mom's stuff.
Gosh.
But I have all my dad's stuff.
Right.
And so it's about how do you help yourself get out of your own way. So I have in my organization, there's 3 levels of strategic alliances that we use. One is the normal, the CP. Mm-hmm. CPAs, the estate planning attorneys,
of course,
the mortgage brokers. Then there's the tweeners, like the fitness coaches,
right,
nutrition experts, and traditional psychotherapists. And then there's my esoteric layer.
Yeah.
And these are these energy healers that help, can help cut the cords, and then can help, mm-hmm, can see what your own patterning is so that you can cut some of that stuff out of your subconscious. Because so much of what messes with us on a financial perspective, mm-hmm, particularly where the economic times are today, is all in our subconscious mind,
right,
not in our conscious mind.
So for the symposium that you were at, the Deepak Chopra, mm-hmm, and you know, there they are saying that if you can tap into that layer, it'll be 30 seconds instead of 8 years of therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen this happen. We've talked about this before. I have been to some of these practitioners. I had,
yep,
Therese Rowley in the studio, who talks about past lives and helping,
yep,
people get out of their way, and,
yep,
works with CEOs. So do you think that there's going to be a time where, I don't know, 10 years from now, you're going to be sitting at a conference and be at a table with CEOs and CPAs and everybody who will be like, oh, yeah, you know what? I found out about this problem I had in the 14th century.
Yeah.
And it's all better. Thanks to that, now I've invested more wisely,
yeah,
or whatever. I mean, do you think that's a conversation that you can see happening in the next few years, or will it take decades?
No, I actually think it's going to change really, really fast. And, mm-hmm, I think it's going to be more common. And what's interesting is that I had a couple years ago, I was interviewed for Reuters,
mm-hmm,
and he's like, I'm looking for some really esoteric topics. I'm like, I've got one for you. And I told him about the cord cutting and, mm-hmm, holographic repatterning. And then he went and he said, hey, do you have some people that I can interview to? And he got different perspectives on it.
Right.
And they had actually extended the story because so many people are interested. So if you look at anyone who's really excelled in life,
mm-hmm,
many, many of those people have done some form of this work. But nobody's talking about it because they don't want to be the weirdo.
Right.
Right? But,
yeah,
all of them, if you look at people who have really excelled,
mm-hmm,
these people have all done some form of this work.
So the moment I came out with my first book, Stay Tuned, where I interviewed some people who talk about doing this work,
mm-hmm,
my traditional journalism friends that weren't dipping their toe into the woo-woo pond,
yep,
put me into this box of weird,
yes,
right? And labeled me as such.
Yep.
And, you know, they're the ones that are miserable and, you know, dealing with lots of illness and sadness and whatever. And I have to say, it hasn't always been rosy,
mm-hmm,
but I know that deep down I'm on the right path.
Correct.
I'm talking about things that I know,
yep,
are going to be more mainstream soon.
Mm-hmm.
They are bubbling under the surface. People in living rooms and in doctor's offices and therapist's office,
yep,
are talking about this more than we have any,
yeah,
idea.
Totally.
And that's the thing that people need to start embracing. You know, nuclear bomb watching used to be a spectator sport in the 50s.
Correct.
In Nevada.
Yep.
They would sit on the head of their car and watch the ash fall on their noses, and they were like, that was beautiful. You know, radioactive ash on their nose.
Yes.
That's good for you. But this is all we knew,
yep,
at the time. And,
yep,
if we don't ask questions, we're never going to expand our consciousness.
Yep.
We're,
yep,
never going to get there.
100%.
Yeah.
And I believe that we had the Industrial Revolution, then we had the Technology Revolution. I actually think it's going to be the Energy Revolution is the next one.
Okay.
And that's when we're going to see our next big secular bull market actually take off.
Got
and
it.
It's because it's not only infiltrated into conversations with holographic repatterning or, mm-hmm, cord cutting experts. It filters through to everything. It filters through to what Tesla's doing in terms of testing a battery that will completely take care of, will get rid of the electric grid that most cities operate on.
Right.
And like it's going to ripple effect into how we understand energy,
right,
in the quantum field. And it leaks through to all aspects. And the scientists are already proving it.
So Dr. Judith Orloff tells me that she leaves money in public places because the energy, the effect of when people find money,
mm-hmm,
how excited they get when they,
yep,
oh, I found five bucks. Well, now if I find 20 bucks, I'm like, oh no, who's missing their $20? Like, they're so sad right now. I wish I could find them, you know, instead of being like, oh yay, gift for me, you know, empath problems. But anyway, she says that that really helps. She feels that that puts good energy out there,
sure,
and such. And I also interviewed Pam Grout, author of E Squared and E Cubed, and she was talking about if every once in a while you have to treat yourself to something like that really nice dress because it tells like the universe,
yep,
that you deserve it.
Yep.
But when does that get to be entitlement and being frivolous? So dropping money in public places and spending a little bit extra on that dinner or that dress. You know, where's the fine line, Julie? Help me find that out.
The fine line is when you do those things and you're creating debt in your life, which is like a lead balloon.
But sometimes the one-time dress that you really don't think you can afford is a little bit creating debt, but not a lot. Does that
make
sense?
Well, so that's where, you know, when I'm working with clients, when you, first of all, anyone who's, you know, I was raised Catholic. And so anyone who was raised Catholic, and my good friends tell me that this is the same way for when people are raised in the being Jewish, is the fact that there's this guilt that if
when
we
you spend
do
on
for
yourself.
Ourselves, that you have this guilt. And that, to me, is just a limiting belief that's been passed down from generation to generation.
Right.
And so when I say that it's about having things in right alignment, it's about looking at what financial past have you created, which is your debt.
Right.
And then your cash flows are what's in the present moment. And then your future is what you want to build in terms of, you know, college funding, retirement, emergency reserves, all that stuff.
Right.
And so the challenge is that when we typically get like a lump sum of money, let's just say a tax return or a bonus or an inheritance, right? It's money that wasn't part of your daily cash flows. And all of a sudden you go, oh,
whoa,
my God, I got to go do this. I got to go do that. And
right.
The challenge is that if you don't seed your intentions in what you want to create and clean up your past and spend frivolously in the moment and do all three of those at the same time, you're not going to be in energetic alignment, because if you only do it from a spending perspective, then you're not honoring the fact that, oh, God, I still have this lead balloon of some debt. And what I have learned that if we consistently apply that pattern of when you get chunks or extra checks or things you didn't expect, and you split it between cleaning up your past and buying something frivolous and seeding your future, then eventually what happens is you clean up your past, because then eventually it'll go away.
Right.
So it allows you to live more in the present moment, so you don't have those urges and needs for that old dress, because it's not an emotional charge to then have to go buy it.
To feel better.
Right, because you've been helping yourself feel better along the journey of cleaning things up.
Got it.
That's where most financial professionals get it wrong, in my opinion, because of the fact that we say, we have to get out of all this debt. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've heard even TV personalities say that, going, you can't do anything else until you pay off your debts.
Right.
And it's like, well, how does that make a person feel?
Right. Like they're a loser out of the gate.
Yeah. Like you keep getting punched in the face. Thank you. Thank you for giving me another right hook.
Right.
You
exactly.
know, and that doesn't feel good to anybody. So what I say is, you know, let's clean up your past, but let's not give your past of what you did in the past much energy. Let's just clean it up.
Right.
And then what do you want to do today? I always tell people, I'm like, I want them to have a savings account that's called their piss away fund.
Okay.
And they're like, what? My finance person wants me to have
a fund? Piss away fund?
I know. I go, because at some point you're going to get the urge to get the golf clubs or that piece of jewelry that makes no logical sense, or that dress or the pair of shoes. You know, I can't
say. So you dip into that. Right.
And so you have this thing that gives you permission to just go giggle.
Right.
But when you do it with a credit card and you have it with debt, that doesn't make anybody giggle. It just gives you a spending hangover.
Yeah, it does. Because then it just keeps paying and paying and paying and paying.
Right. Yes. And this is how you get an energetic alignment with your money.
Okay.
And also living today and creating the tomorrow that you want.
Got it. So then for people that, for the energy to be positive, you can still look in the rearview mirror at the debt that's living, but not let that run you.
Right. You just make it as efficient as possible based on your current reality, because you only have your current reality.
Okay.
You don't have anything else.
Right.
So
that's true.
Why sulk about it?
Yeah.
Do you just kind of go, oh, there it is.
Wow. Look at that.
I got it. That kind of sucks. Own it.
Got
wear it.
It
or, oh my gosh, that's really great. And it's okay that I, you know, some people are the opposite end of the pendulum. Like, you know, the people who hoard money.
Right.
They have so much for tomorrow.
Right.
And they've never held debt ever. They like to pay cash for their cars. And I'm going, but you're not living today.
Right.
Like,
let's talk about that, paying cash for your car versus just leasing. I'm actually going through this right now. The energy behind, do I just run this car that I have into the ground, which is 80,000 miles, and it's paid off.
Yeah.
Run it until it dies, and then decide which way to go. Because literally everyone's like, oh, they have such opinions about this. It just blows my mind. It's
totally.
A car, people.
Yeah.
You know, and then part of me is thinking, should I just be a share rider? But I like to be able to have the car to be able to take my son to swimming or take him, you know, if
so
we want to go visit.
So you already know part of the answer,
okay.
right?
I think I want a car. Yeah.
But, and then the question is whether you do you lease or do you take a loan?
Right.
And so some of that depends on the cash flows, right? And so certainly it costs more on a monthly basis to own a better car, you know, and some people say, you know what, I had a woman who actually decided, you know what, I have about 200,000 miles on my Honda Accord, and I'm an attorney, and I really can't show up to anything with this car anymore because it's got rust. And
right, sure.
And so she had $9,000 saved in a car fund, and she just turned around and bought another Honda Accord with $9,000, so it only had 80,000 miles on it.
Nice.
And it looked a hell of a lot better than her last one. So yeah. So what my point in bringing this up is the fact that it's how you define it to be, because you have to do what feels the most expansive to you, mm-hmm. because that's what will actually bring more money to you.
So if you're feeling that you're doing yourself a disservice, that will actually prevent the flow from coming.
You got it.
Okay.
And it happens over and over.
Give me some examples of when people do that to themselves.
So for example, like if people second guess themselves, like they have a choice of do I lease or do I own or should I wait, right? And if mm-hmm. they sit there and they go, and if they're contemplating, like right then and there, if you're contemplating, should I get the car or should I not get the car? Mm-hmm. You already know the answer that you shouldn't get the car, because that's why you're contemplating whether you should or shouldn't.
Okay.
Right? Like just understand that that is an answer within itself. That right. is your subconscious trying to give you a clue, but we actually don't tune into that.
Got it.
Okay. And so...
Oh, that's our subconscious giving us a little alert, like
right.
a wink.
Okay. Well, and some people don't actually notice that, so other people notice it through their body. Like if you're getting nervous or have anxiety about it, well, then now's not... Maybe you don't have all the information to actually make the decision today.
Okay.
And so just postpone and say, you know what? I'm going to address this next week or next month, or
right.
you know, and that's okay too. But if something really makes you giggle, mm-hmm. you know, like last year I had said, I have this two-door hardtop convertible Lexus that is a 2004.
Okay.
So it's 12 years old. It's
right.
been paid off for years. And I have four children now.
I was going to say, how practical is that for four toddlers?
Exactly. There is
honey,
no practical...
hold on to the hood.
So for years, we had, for the last 5.5 years, we had the big GMC Acadia
right.
to truck the family around. So whoever had the kids had the big car,
right.
and whoever didn't
had
drove
the car,
little
yeah.
small car. And then I was like, you know what? This thing really doesn't get around well in the snow in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like going, oh, I don't want another car payment.
Sure.
You know, but I'm like, God, a mini SUV, because I can't do a minivan.
Right.
A mini SUV would just help if you had two kids to take somewhere.
Sure, sure.
And so I decided at the end of last year that, you know what? I'm just going to lease it.
Mm-hmm.
For the next 4 years.
Right.
And so I drive the fun car in the nice weather, and I ride the mini SUV while I'm bringing them to school. So,
right.
And my kids actually, it's funny, they're small enough that there is two actual bucket seats in the back of the little convertible.
Oh, nice.
So they love, you know, driving that to school.
Sure.
But to me, I didn't have a payment on the other car, so
right.
it wasn't going to put me in any financial duress.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just saving that money from my last car payment into a savings account, because
right.
that's one of the best things I think somebody can do,
mm-hmm.
is when you're done making a car payment, just keep making it into a savings account that's
somewhere
separate
else.
Than everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, money's energy. You're going to energize. And don't just call it your next car fund. There's online savings accounts now that you can actually name your financial intentions that I love.
Ooh.
So call it your two-door hardtop convertible Lexus or whatever it is for you.
Nice.
Right? And just claim what it is that you want.
What are some other things that are out there, like the naming your savings account, that are new, sort of cool, positive energy things that our listeners might benefit from knowing about?
Well, going back to even these savings accounts, you know, there's some of them. There's, you know, today there's Ally Bank. There's Capital One 360. Discover has one. American Express has one. But they're paying a lot more. Online savings accounts pay a lot more than do regular banks like Chase or Bank of America, because
wow.
they have all the brick and mortar.
Okay.
So if you have a bank that has a lot of brick and mortar, their savings accounts aren't going to pay as much interest as the ones that are online that have less locations.
Okay.
And it's just a function of business, right?
And what percentage rate are we talking about?
So you're talking about, like, regular savings accounts right now are like 0.05%,
right.
whereas online ones are at 1%.
Okay. Well,
so it's 95% more interest.
Yeah, that'll
And
that'll
as interest
do.
Rates go up, that will be just a bigger spread.
Right.
And so what I love about these online accounts is that you can create as many of these buckets as you want.
Mm-hmm.
So I always have people, like, if something causes problems in your cash flows, like your car insurance comes every 6 months.
Right.
Or your life insurance bill comes once a year.
Right. Or your taxes.
Or your taxes,
twice
right.
a year.
Mm-hmm. Or your real estate taxes. Let's say you don't
yeah.
have an escrow.
Right.
Well, you can set up accounts to where right after your check gets deposited inside your checking account, account, sweep it back out to a savings account that's called real estate tax fund.
Right.
Or, you know, your car fund, like I was talking about, or your other pain points, your annual insurance bill fund.
Right.
And then more fun ones are like, well, the holiday fund,
right.
You know, whether you celebrate Christmas or Hanukkah.
The sunny beach fund.
Yeah. Your vacation fund.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's one of the biggest questions in the present moment. Like, I have people tell me all the time, like, going, oh my gosh, I would love to go on vacation. I'm like, well, what savings accounts do you have set up for that? And like, I don't have one. I'm like, well, of course you don't go on vacation then, because you don't have it. Your money is not energizing what you want
that
to
intention.
Create. Mm-hmm. It's so important.
Right. So speaking of creating, are you a believer of vision boards when it comes to finances? I really have a problem with the secret. Basically, I feel like their main message was, if you have a vision board, you too will get a diamond necklace. You know, it's like, it ain't that easy, people. And that does not create happiness.
Well,
what are your thoughts behind that?
So it's funny that you bring this up, because in my second book, I actually have a whole section on this.
On vision boards?
Well, vision boards. But I said the problem with vision boards, in my opinion, is that it creates a form of suffering for people.
Because you look at it and you think what you don't have.
Exactly.
Okay, got
it. So it's almost another way that we're reliving our negative limiting beliefs.
Got it.
And it's just reinforcing it, going, oh, this is my self-hatred or my lack of self-love, that, oh my God, I'm not doing this and I didn't get that, and so now I'm a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I shift that in my new book, where I'm like, let's do vision boarding 2.0. It's called Vision Living.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't have it be this thing that you're posting up on the wall. Just do it in the present moment. Like, start to do things in the present moment in real time that are just going to reinforce creating what it is that you want to have for tomorrow.
Well, okay, so for my, I did a vision board a couple of years ago where it was just like things that make me feel good and peaceful, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was a vision of a sandy beach with the beautiful waters, and then a waterfall, and then a person getting a massage, and all those kinds of things. So for me, that was a good one, because it wasn't like, you suck, Jen, you can't have these things.
Right.
It was like, remember, you've had this in the past, this and you will have it again.
Yes, right.
You know?
Right.
But so how would you recommend then, if I ditched that whole concept, but I wanted to think about a peaceful place where I had my feet in the sand and the water was blue and turquoise.
You have to manifest it.
Okay.
So meaning that you have to make it tangible. Mm. So a vision board is not tangible. So what is the behavior that you're doing that's going to reinforce you getting on the beach? And that's like setting up your beach fund, your vacation fund.
I see.
And having money from every paycheck go to that. And I don't even care if you start with $5 a paycheck.
Right.
It's about shifting the energy.
10 a week.
Do it in an instant. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody can take that one Starbucks off your list and now have, you know, a vacation fund. People go, well, it'll take me forever. I go, it's not going to take you forever, because the minute you start to feel the excitement that it's a possibility,
right,
you're going to make other decisions and you're going to shore other things up, because you're going to make that happen.
So I got into an argument with a friend recently because I said, you know, if you just cut the Starbucks out every single day and put that in a fund. And she was like, I like my Starbucks and I don't want to cut it out. And I'm taking away that. I was like, you know what I did is I bought the coffee beans, and I grind my coffee and I brew it at home, and and my whole house smells like yummy breakfast coffee.
Right.
And then I sweeten it with whatever I want to sweeten it. And, you know, and I don't do the Starbucks. Maybe now, holiday time, I will splurge on an occasional eggnog latte.
Sure.
But I would get into these arguments where she was like, my quality of life is treating myself because I'm worth it. And I don't smoke cigarettes and I don't drink and I don't do this. This is what I do. And I'm like, okay, I got that. But I would rather spend that money on a nice glass of wine.
Sure.
Than on a Starbucks when I can make it at home.
Well, and that to me is exactly it, is that we all are authentic within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And each of us are here to do a different thing.
Right.
And so what's so important, particularly as I'm training even my other advisors, that you have to stay neutral in the judgment of allowing people to have. To me, that Starbucks for your friend represents something completely different than the actual drink.
She might need to get a cord cut, maybe, or a past life.
Or maybe it's about the fact that her parents would never let her have anything outside of the house and home cooking when she was a kid, and now, gosh darn it, she's gonna do it.
Right.
Because when we're told that we can't do something, we act like teenagers, and then we completely act out because we either work things out or we act them out, and we do that through our money or through our health.
Right, right.
And so what she's referring to there is, I'm not acting out through my health. I'm not smoking. I'm not drinking. I'm not doing anything. But I'm going to
spend $5 a cup.
Right. So she's acting it out in her money.
Yeah.
I mean, I see time and time again when somebody gets their money stuff in order, all of a sudden they gain 15 pounds.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden they lose the 15 pounds again, and now they created $10,000 of credit card debt.
Whoa.
Because when we're not aware of the patterns, it's like, okay, so what is that subconscious thing that's screwing with you?
Right.
And how do we get that cleared?
Okay.
And you got to allow yourself the space to go through the process that, you know, it's okay that you went up to 15,000 credit card debt because, you know, when I met you, you were at 35,000.
Right.
And now we're cutting it off at 15 because you're going to make another conscious choice that you don't want to repeat that pattern again.
Right.
So, okay.
Right.
But it's about the fact that the person has to feel like they have a safe space to actually be able to communicate that this is not something I'm willing to give up.
Right.
And I've had people tell me crazy things that they're not willing to give up. I had one woman who was $600 pair of jeans. Her husband said, the only reason I'm here with a female financial planner is because you have to tell my wife to stop buying designer jeans at $600 a pop.
Okay, that's crazy.
And
she wouldn't
enough,
give them up? She wouldn't?
She wouldn't give it up. But to me, so what it boiled down to is I peeled the onion.
Mm-hmm.
It was about a control factor between husband and wife.
Got it.
She had always been an independent professional. They got married in their mid-30s, and he wanted to clamp down on her spending.
Okay.
And she's like, I make a six-figure income. Don't you tell me how to do this.
Uh-huh.
And I go, okay, so before you guys have kids, we need to find this happy balance. And so what we found was, it was interesting. She then turned around and started, I go, what about if we took the jeans? I said, how long do you wear them? She goes, about 6 months.
Okay.
And I said, and you buy more every 6 months? She goes, yeah, within 4 to 6 months.
Yeah.
I said, okay, how much could you turn around and sell those on eBay if they're only 6 months old? It's still cutting edge jeans.
Right.
And she goes, I could probably sell them for $300 or $400.
There you go.
You know? And I go, okay, so, and she goes, I'm never going to do that. And he goes, I'll do it for you.
Nice.
And so we created this collaborative business effort between husband and wife. So then the net, they were only out $200 to $300 per pair.
That's much better.
Because she was buying 7 to 10 pairs. Because at work, she could wear jeans because she was in the ad agency world.
Uh-huh.
And so what it did is it just stopped. We found a collaborative effort. And then what really happened after she stopped, after the fighting stopped, she didn't really care if she had the designer jeans anymore. Like, it no longer had power or energy behind it.
Got it.
It was really just a power play between spouses.
So I have another person that I know that just when bills come, she won't do anything digitally. Everything is snail mailed, and she just puts it on a pile and doesn't look at them until, you know, creditors call. I mean, that's just her complete denial in the pile, I call it. She's got denial in the pile. So what do you recommend for that person?
Well, first of all, you have to forgive yourself for what reality that you're in.
Yeah.
And that, 'cause that's really what it boils down to,
right?
And so if we don't deal with our current reality, all we're doing on a physical level then is starting to allow our bodies to start to decay, which then creates disease, and then that eventually leads to death.
Right.
You know, again, I'll go back to Deepak Chopra. He says that what is it that 50 years ago we died in our sleep?
Yeah.
Now we suffer for 10 to 15 years and then we die.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we don't have to suffer for 10 to 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because we're not dealing with our actual reality in the present moment.
Right.
And it's getting stored somewhere on a cellular level.
Right.
So we have to deal with what is coming out of here. When I wrote my first book, 50% of my male clients between 55 and 65 developed cancer around their hip area.
Hmm.
Colon, prostate cancer. And it was rampant. I'm going, what the heck happens? And
first
then in
chakra
my
issues? What is
yeah,
this?
Yeah, first, second chakra.
Yeah.
And I was like, so what is this about?
Mm-hmm.
And every single one of those guys who wound up with the cancer, they actually lost their jobs, not by their choice.
Aha. So their identity.
So they lost their sense of purpose.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so then, so I've been coaching men going, hey, this is where this is going to lead, because when Western medicine starts to go, something's not right, but nothing, everything's clear. Like, to me, that's just the warning sign. It's coming.
Right.
Because Western medicine doesn't detect it until disease is in stages 5 or 6.
Right.
Whereas on Eastern philosophy, stages 1 through 4. And
correct.
So, but it goes back to the fact that we work things out or we act them out, and we do it through our money or through our health.
Yes.
And so if you're not willing to deal with the envelopes and they're sitting there in your pile, you know, and you're not looking at them, at some point it's going to act out.
Right.
You know, my dad had one of those piles.
Yeah.
God love him. You know, he had 12 children, so God knows he had a pile.
Exactly.
But you know what? His shift didn't happen until he had a stroke when he was 57 years old.
Ugh. Yeah.
You know, why do we have to choose the crisis?
Right.
We do not have to choose the crisis. We don't have to choose the financial crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is even at large.
Right.
We don't have to choose a global economic meltdown to force us to shift. I'm hoping that we have gotten past the point that we're not going to have a global crisis, but we are on the edge.
It's
Boy,
real
are
close.
We on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
One chaotic event and it's going to go bloop.
Right.
Fundamentally, the numbers look fine right now, which is hard for the general public to believe.
Yeah.
Because, and it's because the probability of loss in the markets is 98% in a state of chaos. In a recession, the probability of loss in the S&P 500 is 54%.
Right, right.
So be more afraid of the chaotic event than you are of a recession, actually. And and so it's about how do we as individuals cope? It's like you got to create insulation.
Right.
You know, it's about having your personal fiscal world with some space. We are doing everything on the edge these days. We're spending all of our money. Or more than the money that's going in our checking accounts.
Right.
And that's not creating financial space.
No.
And so we got to create some of this padding that is healthy padding.
Right.
So that we can be our own bailout.
So for those who are listening right now, what three things can they incorporate into their week to try to help them feel more empowered and putting positive energy into their financial landscape?
I think first and foremost, you have to really realize who you're spending your time with, because those people really reinforce the reality that you have.
Got it.
You know, everyone in your life actually has traits of you. That's why they're there. So take the ones that are reinforcing the bad parts of you and just choose to spend less time with them. Because you never know, they may rise to the occasion and shift only if you hold the boundaries. Okay. A lot of people run into that with family members.
Sure. Well, we feel like we don't have a choice, but you really do.
We absolutely do. Mm-hmm. And sometimes holding that boundary allows them to then heal so that they can have the fullest expression of what their soul is here to do.
Right. Absolutely.
Right? The second thing is, open the envelopes. Look at your reality. You know, don't stick your head in the sand anymore. I have people all the time walking to my office with closed envelopes.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
that's more common than not.
Because then it just makes it less real if I don't open it.
Yeah, and it's still there,
right. No,
you know,
still there,
because you really actually can't heal until you actually open the envelopes and look at your reality. And even if you need some support while you're doing it, well, then get a good friend who's a really good cash flow manager to sit with you, or somebody who's a good investor. You know, if you don't even want to work with a planner, just find a friend who's actually good at those things.
Right, right.
Right?
You we all have a friend in our wheelhouse that's good
absolutely,
with money.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the third thing is just do everything that gives you extreme self-care. Because at the core of everything, that if you don't, you know, have that piss away fun that I was talking about.
Right.
You know, if you don't enjoy it along the way, you can't replace this present moment. And I'm not saying don't plan for your future, because you absolutely should. But also make sure that you're cleaning up your past. Because energetically, we cannot just keep declaring bankruptcy and making it somebody else's problem. From big corporations to the individual.
Right.
Making it somebody else's problem is still causing havoc in our economy.
Right, because it's like the lesson will keep coming back in a different costume.
And the 2x4 will come harder and harder until we shift.
That's right. Oh, Julie Murphy Castle, so awesome to chat with you. The Emotion Behind Money, Awaken Your Wealth, those are the books that you can find. JMC Wealth Management is where you'll find Julie, and your website is?
JMCWealth.com.
Perfect. For all of those listening, I definitely recommend her books because they're an easy read, and they are also going to change your financial landscape. So that's important. I'm Jennifer Weigel, and I can be found at jenweigel.com. Julie, thanks for all the good you're putting out there.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Thanks for being here, and we will check you all next time.